Good morning. Today we're continuing the hospitality theme and we're looking at Jesus' first miracle of turning water into wine at the wedding in Cana. Jesus was invited to a wedding and his presence changed the course of events and became the beginning of his ministry. I've titled this talk Dealing with Disappointment, which may seem like a strange title for a talk about Jesus performing his first miracle and turning water into wine. But this is where my thoughts have been taking me when thinking more generally after reading this passage. Throughout the Gospels, we see people encountering Jesus and him performing many amazing miracles and people open up to him. But how do we deal with the disappointment when we don't see these kingdom moments in our lives? How do we react when we have invited Jesus in, we've prayed and believed and stepped out in faith, being obedient to God, and we still haven't seen him move in ways we'd hoped? Maybe this can lead us to think it's easier to not hope and believe for too much. Maybe it's easier or less risky to play it safe. What happens when we invite Jesus in full of hope and expectation, but we don't experience the miracle? Let's look at the passage in John, and as you listen to the passage or listen to me talk, think about what your expectations of Jesus are when you ask him to intervene in situations in life. So the wedding in Cana is written about in John 2, verses 1 to 12. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water," so they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink, but you've saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples. There they stayed for a few days. Turning water into wine was the first miracle that Jesus performed. It's significant for several reasons. It was one of the greater things the disciples were to see, and through it Jesus revealed his glory. And as a result of seeing this miracle, his disciples believed in him. The account of this miracle contributes to the overall purpose of John's gospel, to promote belief in Jesus. I'm sure you've heard this passage preached on before and will know that it was a social embarrassment for the host to run out of wine during the wedding feast. We don't know exactly why Mary approached Jesus to do something about it, but maybe she felt the relationship between her family and the bridegroom obliged her to take action to relieve their embarrassment. The fact that she asked him indicated her level of faith in him and her knowledge and understanding of what he was capable of, even though he hadn't yet stepped into his ministry. When Mary asks him to get involved, he replies with, "Woman, why do you involve me? My hour has not yet come." Scholars believe there is some sort of confrontation or rebuke in this reply because of how the same language is used in other contexts in the New Testament. But despite this, he does still act. Colin Cruz says, "Jesus' words to his mother, 'My hour has not yet come,' may have meant it was not quite time for him to respond to her implied request, though, of course, shortly afterwards he did so. However, in the light of the fact that this is the first of seven references to Jesus' hour, a major theme in this gospel, it may have greater significance. The first three references indicate that Jesus' hour had not yet come, and the last four indicate that it had come. The hour towards which everything was moving was the hour of Jesus' glorification, which took place through his death, resurrection, and exaltation. Bearing this in mind, Jesus could have been informing his mother that he was acting now only according to his father's timetable, with his eyes fixed on the hour to come, even though he did go on to fulfil her implied request. I like an observation that Cruz makes. He says, it seems that as she knew she could turn to her son in time of need, she also knew to leave things to him once she'd made the need known. All Mary says is, they have no more wine. She merely presents Jesus with a problem, knowing that he can act and be the solution, but she does not make any suggestions as to what he should do. I can find this hard, leaving something in God's hands. I somehow feel that I need to tell God exactly what should happen for the best outcome, and sometimes I tell him again and again, although there are times persistence in prayer is needed. But me telling God what to do can lead to disappointment and a belief that he hasn't answered if a situation hasn't turned out how I thought it should. This miracle is a great example of turning a problem over to Jesus and having complete faith and trust that he'll deal with it and is concerned and moved enough to intervene. Handing a situation over to God and completely trusting him is easier said than done, though. It can sound very simple. Make your request to God and he'll sort the problem out. Turning water into wine is the first of many miracles and stories of God's kingdom manifesting on earth in the Gospels. When I read of the amazing things that Jesus did, I think about how incredible it must have been to be walking alongside Jesus during those times and seeing the miracles of physical and spiritual healing that took place. God's kingdom was impacting the earth and then in such tangible ways. And I like to think that I would have had no doubts and would have completely trusted. This creates a longing in me to see more of God's kingdom on earth in our country in the 21st century. However, when I've stepped out in faith and prayed for God to intervene, I often haven't seen results, or at least ones that I can tangibly see at the time. So how do we respond when our faith doesn't seem to align with what we believe God can do and has done, when we don't see immediate results or apparent answers? For me personally, I don't react too well and I start questioning. I like to understand things, but faith often makes no sense and God never seems to act the same way twice. And sometimes he acts when there is a small amount of faith present, and at other times there's been a great amount of prayer for something, but the miracle doesn't materialise. It doesn't seem like God has come through. It feels like faith would be so much easier if I knew how God was going to respond and I knew that when I prayed for something there'd be obvious breakthrough. But more often than not, we're left with questions and disappointments. Why did we not see the result we'd been contending for? We may have prayed faithfully and obediently and stepped out of our comfort zones, but still been left disappointed. I've been wrestling with these thoughts and questions over the last year, which is why my thinking has gone this way with this passage. But I was reminded last week of the story of my friend's friend in America. It's a story that fills me with sadness and disappointment because prayers weren't answered in the way we'd hoped, but also humbles me and fills me with hope because of the response of those involved. There was and still is pain and disappointment, but also a deep understanding of God's heart, of love and his presence. Some of you will remember praying for baby Layla 8 years ago. During her pregnancy, Aubrey and Nick were told that their baby had a condition where she'd only have half a brain and would not live beyond birth. There was so much prayer that went into that situation, and I remember someone saying, "The nations are praying for your baby," as there were so many people across different countries praying. Some of us got together in the chapel and prayed. However, despite praying for a miracle, on the 11th of February 2014, Layla was born blind and deaf with half of her brain missing. I remember being angry with God. Why had he not healed this precious baby? Why had he missed this opportunity to display his goodness and power? Despite inviting Jesus in, there was no miracle like the ones in the Gospels. But I want to share with you what Aubrey wrote this last week as Layla would have been turning 8, as they decorate their house in pink each February to remember her. At Valentine's Day, we deeply remember when heaven met earth. My heart still turns violently inside of my chest. I think of the way he loved us. It's like a fire in my bones, a scream that rises up and won't let go. My breath leaves, my knees give in. Every part of me hurts, cries, misses, gives thanks. It's a story that still breathes, still touches, still heals, still brings glory. As Layla Jubilee made her quiet entrance on February the 11th, 2014, to the chorus on our speaker, "Oh, how he loves us, oh, how he loves us." Equal parts horror and peace, pain and love, broken and held. As the wail rose inside my heart, as it tore with disappointment and grief, simultaneously the roar of heaven rose, as the heart of my father broke too. I felt his righteous anger at death and suffering. I felt his tender heart bear hug mine, a blanket of peace like I've never known, his tangible presence closer than my breath. 4 days later, February the 15th at 7:42 a.m., the sunlight whispering in, her breathing slowed, her hands around my finger loosened, her heartbeat grew faint, but that roar of heaven thundered within. As her blind eyes were opened to the face of our King, her deaf ears hearing his familiar voice, "Welcome, sweet girl." Never have I been so sure of a present Father, a loving King, a Saviour familiar with suffering wrapped around me once again. 8 years later, I'm still gutted by his heart and his love. When I share her story, he draws close, instilling hope, covering hurts. It's a living, breathing story even years after she left my arms. We fought for, contended for, asked a million ways for her healing, for her to stay. What we got instead was an unshakable faith, an encounter with love. We are his portion and he is our prize. He is my prize. When I think of her memorial service, an encounter service, the hearts that were turned to his, the prodigals that returned home, the broken bodies that were healed, his tender love raining down as we honoured his goodness displayed in her tiny body. I'm joyfully and mournfully poured out these days of pink, of hearts and love, hummingbirds and cherry blossoms. I look back and remember when my Jesus came, when faith became tangible. His goodness kept my heart afloat. When I became a mum to a little girl who changed my life and faith forever. Happy birthday week. Happy heaven day, my sweet girl. I'll be thankful forever. I think if I just shared these words with you this morning, it would be enough. Not everything turns out as we would hope in the world. God doesn't always act in the ways we think he should. We don't always see the miracles we prayed and longed for. But there is always hope when we invite him in and trust in his goodness. I'm on a journey of trying to rest and trust in his goodness, believing that if I place things before him, if I invite him in, he will come. Psalm 27 verse 13 to 14 says, "What would have become of me had I not believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living? Wait for and confidently expect the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage." Yes, wait for and confidently expect the Lord.